Did you receive?
Thank you for the weekly discussion. I hope I can hear you.
Did you hear me? Did you receive the email and the WhatsApp I sent you of the sutras today?
No, I had no chance to open it, but that means we are going to start with the new sutta.
Yeah, that's right, the Sariputta sutta.
That last time I saw it, but for the moment I don't have the book, never mind. You can give an introduction and start. Whenever necessary, I feel I will do it.
Are you using your phone?
Need any time for interview reports or something like that? If it is so, we can take a few minutes.
Yes, Bhante, Avasarai Bhante. There are two reports we have received to present something this time.
Please carry on. Please go ahead.
Yes, Bhante. Vishmi, 14 years old, RSP mentioned, yeah. Mindful walking. I began observing my foot placement, which went from the heel to the arch to the toes. I began observing the shift from warm temperatures when my foot was lifting and cold temperatures when it was placing on the tile floor. As I continued walking, the difference became a bit smaller, but it was still there. I also observed the weight shifting throughout my feet as they moved too. I noticed that when the pressure was building in the heel, as the rest of the foot placed down, I felt a warm feeling inside my foot, even though the outer layer of skin was cool because of the tile floor. Then, when the toes began placing down, the weight became distributed more evenly along the foot, and the warm feeling inside my foot decreased a bit. I got some thoughts and sounds during the session, but I was normally aware that I wasn't observing my primary object and was having thoughts or other outside noises, and I would come back to the primary object in a couple of minutes. I did mindful walking for 45 minutes, mindful sitting. I sat down and began observing my breath within a few minutes. I started by watching the inhales and exhales. I had cool long inhales and warm short exhales, which were around half a length of the inhale. I observed how most of the time one nostril felt breathing more prominently than the other, and it switched between them a couple of times throughout the session. I also observed that the inhales were only felt in the nostrils, whereas the exhales were felt in both the nostrils and mouth at the same time. Then, as I continued to observe it, I noticed that the exhales coming from the nostrils were slightly cooler than the exhales in my mouth. There were also some outside noises and thoughts during the session, but I didn't consider them distraction most of the time because I knew it was happening. I did mindful sitting for 45 minutes. That's the end of report, Bhante. Bhante, your mic is muted.
Okay, thank you. Very happy to hear more than 45 minutes walking and 45 minutes of sitting of a very young person like 13 years. And in walking meditation, it says can feel the heat and cold to the legs, and will while continuing, the difference reduces. That means cold becomes somewhat heated, heat becomes somewhat cold, and that is why you don't feel the difference. So that is what we call changing nature. So you have to touch with the heat and observe it to the reduction, or you have to get the touch with the coldness and it is reducing. And that difference not happening in a stage-wise. It is a very gradual process. Our mind cannot understand how the changes are happening. So therefore, we think, we look at it once in a way, and then we found something changed. But you keep on with the thin slicing of time, the changing nature is the undermining thing below the carpet. So if you can observe at your age, sharply like this, no one can cheat you. Even the nature cannot. Because you are observant. That observance is what you call vigilance, the diligence, and you have developed these qualities. Now you have to divert, have to advert this vigilance and diligence to see how the changes are taking place under your very nose. Even in sitting, you feel the left nostril or right nostril. So they are not permanent, they are not static. They are changing. They are changing nature not only in meditation, not only for the 13 years, even the 31 years old, for 90 years old, the changes are the changes. So you are an observant on behalf of the human being. And your experience is shared very well with the other humans like us. Thank you. So therefore, keep it up. But keep an eye to see how the changes are becoming otherwise. How the things are becoming changed, becoming otherwise. That must be your perspective. That must be your adverting of your mind. Soon you will see the secrets of the nature. Thank you for sharing.
Yes, Bhante, the next report. Ashwi, 11 years old, from Rokantam Satipatthala. Mindful walking. Today I started mindful walking inside the house on the 5th floor. In the beginning, I walked freely and pay much attention to anything for few laps. Then I noticed my focus naturally came to the feet and the walking process. I felt the tiles were in normal room temperature, but air around my feet was warm. I felt how my foot lifted, moved forward and placed on the ground. I heard surrounding noises, but I didn't feel it as a distraction. I also had thought, but I really didn't pay attention. When I have about 10 minutes left, I felt the tile floor temperature began to change from room temperature to warm. My feet also becoming a little bit warm. I walked for 20 minutes.
Mindful sitting. I sat down and began observing my breath within a few minutes. I started by watching the inhales and exhales. I had cool long inhales and warm short exhales, which were around half a length of the inhales. I observed how most of the time one nostril felt breathing more prominently than the other. And it switched between them a couple of times throughout the session. I also observed that the inhales were only felt in the nostrils, whereas the exhales were felt in both the nostrils and mouth at the same time. Then, as I continue to observe it, I notice that the exhales coming from the nostrils were slightly cooler than the exhales in my mouth. There were also some outside noises and thoughts during the session, but I didn't consider them distractions most of the time because I knew it was happening. I did mindful sitting for 45 minutes. That's the end of report, Bhante.
I was very happy to hear more than 45 minutes walking and 45 minutes of sitting of a very young person like 13 years. And in walking meditation, it says, can feel the heat and cold to the legs and while continuing, the difference reduces. That means cold become somewhat heated, heat becomes somewhat cold, and that is why you don't feel the difference. So that is what we call changing nature. So you have to touch with the heat and observe it to the reduction, or you have to get the touch with the coldness and it is reducing. and that difference not happening in a stage-wise. It is a very gradual process. Our mind cannot understand how the changes are happening. So therefore, we think, we look at it once in a way and then we found something changed. But if you keep on with the thin slicing of time, the changing nature is an undermining thing below the carpet. So if you can observe at your age sharply like this, no one can cheat you. Even the nature cannot. Because you are observant. That observance is what you call vigilance, the diligence. And you have developed these qualities. Now you have to divert, to advert this vigilance and diligence to see how the changes are taking place under your very nose. Even in sitting, you feel the left nostril or right nostril. So they are not permanent. They are not static. They are changing. That changing nature, not only in meditation, not only for the 13 years, even the 31 years old, for 90 years old, the changes are the changes. So you are an observant on behalf of the human being. And your experience is shared very well with the other humans like us. Thank you. So therefore, keep it up. But keep an eye to see how the changes are becoming otherwise, how the things are becoming changed, becoming otherwise. That must be your perspective. That must be your adverting of your mind. Soon you will see the secrets of the nature. Thank you for sharing.
Yes, Vanti, the next report. Ashmi, 11 years old, from Rokantam Satipasala. Mindful walking. Today, I started mindful walking inside the house on the tile floor. In the beginning, I walked freely and pay much attention to anything for few laps. Then I noticed my focus naturally came to the feet and the walking process. I felt the tiles in normal room temperature, but air around my feet was warm. I felt how my foot lifted, move forward and place on the ground. I heard surrounding noises, but I didn't felt it as a distraction. I also had thought, but I really didn't pay attention. When I have about 10 minutes left, I felt the tile floor temperature began to change from room temperature to warm. My feet also becoming a little bit warm. I walked for 20 minutes, mindful sitting. I sat on bed. I kept my back straight and legs crossed. My focus naturally went to the breathing. I didn't feel the in-breath temperature, but out-breath was warm. I was observing this most of the time. Near the end of the session, when I have my eyes closed, images of the room that I was in appeared in front of my eyes. A man with a scary face came into the room and looked at me. He started to run towards me. Immediately, I opened my eyes just to make sure I wasn't sleeping or dreaming. I still felt my breath. I closed my eyes again. Then a woman came into the room. She was less scary than the man. Then I heard a little kid screaming on my ears. During all these situations, I felt my breathing. But it was hard to focus on specific details. At the end of the session, I felt a relief kind of a sensation. I sat for 20 minutes. That's the end of the report, Bhante.
This is Vishmi or Ashmi?
This is Ashmi.
How many? Age? 11.
Age 11 years.
Yeah, that both of them, I thought now they have advanced at least by 1 year. But still they are claiming the same age. So this report is taking the gradual development of the heat and cold and the gradual changes in the breath. Earlier, Ashmi used to report it. Now Vishmi also learning how to report that becoming contagious, that is a spreading kind of a reporting. But Sitmi is not there. Sitmi is the most the natural girl. And I'm happy to report like this. Definitely that will give a steady, steadfast development for you too, as well as for your whole family. So therefore, this is the thing I was expressing for the last report, the gradual development as the heat become, hot soil become cooler, leg become warmer, and then the difference between the soil and the leg is reducing. Very well explained. Thank you. We are moving forward.
Master Abhanti, there's nothing from this side. Those are the two reports we received.
Buddha Rakhita, whether he is having any comments on these reports or anyone participating having comments, or otherwise we can go to Sariputta Sutta.
I just wanted to comment the younger of the two, the 11-year-old, was very cool in dealing with her meditation, how she kept her mind coming back to the object of her meditation, either sitting or walking, even when she felt quite disturbed by these images of another person or other beings around her. And this ability of mindfulness to separate out reality from other types, maybe other perceptions, is a very important faculty of how we can root, how mindfulness can become the pillar for stability of the mind and stability of knowledge, for truth itself to aggregate, to build up on. Without that pillar, without that core, we can be very much blown around. So she was able to control her, like bring her mind back to the breath. And we always complain when the mind is being disturbed and agitated and going off the breath. But we really need to rejoice at when the mind goes back to the breath, and the kind of grit and determination that it takes to sit through a meditation where difficult experiences are arising, especially we normally talk about the difficulties of that are physical, but this kind of mental difficulty of perceiving sort of unusual maybe beings or presence around us is a very cool state of mind, especially for an 11-year-old child. So that was all I wanted to comment on.
Good that you highlighted it, because whole family was a mindful family. The parents are very weak. They are always talking about the weary looking male face and female face and the children shouting. But this 11 years old is a yogi. She can sit cross-legged and she's becoming very steadfast in meditation. But if they are not reporting, the progress will be hindered. That is why I invited, please come with the early system, weekly reporting. But my mistake is partly due to me, because sometimes I skip this the sessions. But when the Dhamma Sarana or someone is attending, so therefore keep it up. You can see even the ghosts come, even the creator God comes, Vishmi can tackle it. And definitely that will be a backbone for the whole family, the whole healthy nature of the family. Definitely for that 11 years old, when she come up to our age, it will be a pillar-like thing. Thank you, Bhante, for the comments. We are moving.
Tewan Sanai, good morning. I have a little report. At the last time, you recommended to have a look and distinguish between the effortless and the willful effort, or these states. And I found that the effortless approach or the effortless effort, I see more quickly changing phenomena and sense objects, but then not so deep and clear. For example, I just see the breath. I don't really notice if the out or in breath is longer. But then also there is the mindfulness in position of watching out for signs of mind wandering and thoughts, kind of a background alertness. So I'm more aware and noticing when thoughts are coming and proliferating, and mind wandering is more often prevented. As in difference to willful effort in meditation, the object seems to be clearer and experienced deeper, like more details of the breath, but mind wandering happens quickly and unnoticed and more often. Yeah, that's what I found in the difference of these two. And then also at the same time, it is still I experienced the difference between the two states of being aware and a lot of mind wandering.
The good that to discriminate the volitional activity and involuntary activities, willful and the effortless. Effortless is very innocent. There is no agenda behind. But the willful action is very crafty and more permanent than impermanent nature of effortless. And the difficulty is the border between effortless and effortful. That is a mind-made boundary. So you have to experience this again and again and again to define the effortful and effortless. And the whole world, whole learning, whole IT technology and all bloody things are effortful. They are dirty because they are permanent, appear-like, but they are not permanent. But effortless thing, we're floating, innocent, but the thing is how much you are put into the effortless bag when compared to the effortful. That is your judgment. That's your value judgment. Never mind. At least put that into a challenge and continue to see as far as things are effortless, you are not accumulating any karmic forces. Chetanaham bhikkave kammam vadami. That's a very equation the Buddha has given. But from morning to evening, how much willful action, how much determinations, how much predetermined things we are doing, so much so we are destined to hell. We are destined to the nether world. Let the thing happen. Sometimes you can't do let it happen. So therefore you have to do. But if it is so, let it happen through an invitation. At least let the body to come and suggest, I should go to the dining hall. I should go to the toilet. And then you know it. You follow suit. And therefore you can see, reduce the willful action so much so you will never fork into other psychologies. You will never ask someone to do it because you yourself is doing. When the suggestion happens, you consider, then only you second it. That is also effortless. So effortful is full of agenda. Effortless is no agenda. You are just like a baby. You are just like a blooming flower. You are just like a creeper growing, or rather you are just like a root growing toward the darkness and the dampness. It never grow straight. Always bending up and down, so get well anchored and go to the darkness. So likewise, we being civilized, we completely pruned our human nature. We try to cut it off and take into the shape rather than let the tree to grow. So in that case, aboriginals and others, they are not destroying the climate, not destroying the world, not destroying themselves, and they are still live like a herd. So therefore, when we monks are living, when the yogis are living, let the timetable run. You follow suit and you never try to make it adjustments. If at all you are making, with an invitation. So then you are a photosensitive plant like. When the sun is there, you do photosynthesis. So likewise, and it is aesthetic. Good. That I would like to add these other dimensions like border between effortful and effortless, and innocence nature of the effortless, then you feel like a child. You feel like a beginner. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I would also like to just emphasize that the tendency for Westerners is to apply effort or force to everything, because it's the key to success in some ways in the ordinary life. If you don't apply effort, if you don't apply force, you can't really achieve much. But if you have mastery over something, then you start to develop a freedom from that forcing quality, and then effort becomes effortless, or you're free from that forcing effort. And there's an instinctive or instantaneous energy or effort that is available to that one can apply to whatever situation there is. And then virya, the word we define as effort, is viraya, which is the way of the hero. It is heroic. So the actual word that we translate into English as effort isn't effort at all in Pali. It's the way of the hero. And the way of the hero is sometimes going against the current, going against the mob, going against fear. And it is present and aware, and it is awake. It is the application of the mind with diligence towards the object. So it isn't this effort and force and all these other qualities or attributes that the word effort means in English. And the problem with this is that when a yogi becomes fairly skillful and adept in their meditation, because of this emphasis on effort, and in my own experience in coming up in the Burmese tradition, where like most Burmese yogis are not like Western yogis, they're kind of be very sluggish. So when they come into the meditation center, they're very sluggish, and they feel that they've already achieved Nibbana by just showing up. And so the sadhus have to give a lot of exhortation to the yogis to strive and be diligent and work hard and show up and follow the schedule. And it becomes a bit of a meat grinder, like to Westerners. To the Burmese, they sort of just ignore it and just take their own sweet time. But for the Westerners, they take this teaching about effort and turn it into a kind of a self-flagellation and make it very difficult. So they're spinning their wheels. They, instead of just slowing down or relaxing, or at the same time crafting and mastering the right effort or the effortless effort. I mean, you have to initially apply effort to perceive the object, to stay with the object, to show up. But as you spend longer and longer in the practice, you can't be this bully, this mental bully, and sort of just grinding and grinding and grinding in the practice, because you'll just get fatigue, and then you'll go from application of effort to sloth and torpor, because you're fatigued, you're mentally fatigued. So you'll be swinging from exertion to fatigue and dullness and back, and you don't get the balance right. So there is a skill. You overshoot your effort initially, and then you dial it back, and you're too relaxed, and then you overshoot. But eventually you start to get the handle of it, and it becomes an effortless effort, where you apply just the right amount of effort to get the job done. So that's just my own thought about this effortless effort and effort.
So as far as the Burmese experience is concerned, our sadhu is full of effort. So I also thought at the beginning the mindfulness is full of effort. So when we are writing the PhD thesis with Venerable Analeva and myself, I try to convince him throughout that you have to keep on pushing. So Venerable Analeva very innocently telling, Bhante, it is not like that. Maybe at the beginning it is forceful, but later you must let the thing happen. In the way the vine is growing, you have to set the ladder. So, but later, even though at that time I was adamantly telling soon after the Burma, not. But now I also think at the beginning, you have to have the engine start with a lot of fuel, throttle full open. And then the first gear in the old system, you have to run the engine very fast for 1 kilometer. Second gear, third gear, top gear, fourth gear, top gear. Then for a certain amount of mileage or kilometerage, if fuel is less. That is because of the momentum. So present day meditation masters are completely blind towards this. Either they will be throughout effortful or right from the beginning effortless. That won't work. You have to understand the art. That art is what we call life. It is a living thing. So therefore, we have to express ourselves. When we are expressing only, the mature person can grasp the idea. But even some find the linear system. Linear system is effort to effort, effortless to effortless. They don't know how to effort to effortless changing, effortless to effort changing. They think that is something abnormal. So that is why we need inferential knowledge. So we need deductive knowledge. Whenever necessary, you have to change the gear in order to maximize the engine power. Thank you for your comments.
Okay, maybe we'll start.
Now we can go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If Sagara could help you, I emailed it to you, or else you can look at it on WhatsApp on your phone while I'm reading it out in English from Bhikkhu Bodhi. So this is the 16th sutta in the chapter of Octads, which is the fourth chapter in the Sutta Nipada. It's a follow-on from the previous sutta we were studying. So this is called Sariputta, or the Sariputta Sutta. It begins with Sariputta, the Venerable Arahant Sariputta, saying, "I have never before seen, nor have I ever heard it from anyone, a teacher of such lovely speech, leader of a group who has come from Tusita, as the one with vision is seen in the world together with its devas, having dispelled all darkness alone, he achieved delight. To the Buddha, unattached, impartial, not a schemer, one who has come as leader of a group, I have come in need with a question on behalf of many here who are bound." So this again is quite a famous sutta, and it may have passed everybody who is listening to this sutta. Why it's so famous, because it just has one small sentence that says, a leader of a group who has come from Tusita. So this sutta is set in a time where where the Buddha may have been coming from Tusita, or the commentaries also suggest that the Buddha was in a previous life, that his life before he was born as the Buddha to be, he was born, he was in Tusita. So he died in Tusita, and then he was reborn into this life as Gautama, and then he became enlightened as Gautama into the Sakya Buddha. So but this is the sutta where the Abhidhamma gang will say the Abhidhamma, the Buddha came back from spending the wasa in Tusita, and he taught the Abhidhamma to Sariputta. But the actual sutta here indicates what the Buddha actually taught to Sariputta. So here the purpose of the Buddha is that he's going to teach Sariputta, or he's going to demonstrate, he's going to ask questions, 8 questions to Sariputta, and then Sariputta is going to answer them. And by doing this, he's going to demonstrate that he is the foremost disciple of the Buddha in wisdom. However, as you know, for people who believe in Abhidhamma as the teaching of the Buddha, then this is actually where the Abhidhamma was taught to Sariputta by the Buddha after he came back from Tusita, after he'd been teaching his mother. So it's when we read the sutta itself, it's much more it's much simpler and more straightforward, and it doesn't have the structure of an Abhidhamma discussion at all. So the first thing I would say is, I have never before seen, nor have I ever heard it from anyone, a teacher of such lovely speech, leader of a group who has come from Tusita. So here I take it that Sariputta is just being honorific when he says leader of a group who has come from Tusita. He's referring to his lineage, that the Buddha is this person who was in his previous life living in Tusita or had arisen in Tusita, and that now he is the leader of a group, meaning the leader of Buddhists. And Sariputta is this very, very wise person. He's a very talented person. So when he says, I have never seen before, nor have I heard it from anyone, a teacher of such lovely speech, he's making a genuine compliment of the Buddha. And again, there's a Burmese expression, only a snake can see the legs of another snake. So I think Sariputta was very much used to seeing the legs of everybody else. He was so wise and so clever that he was the same or better than anybody else. So when he met the Buddha, he realized that here was somebody his superior and was his teacher. So it's a great joy to meet somebody who is your equal or your superior, and in the holy life. And this is it's very difficult if you have that talent like Sariputta to see the faults in others, to see the lack of quality in others. And so for him to meet somebody like the Buddha, it would be, you know, he is acknowledging how deeply wise the Buddha is. And so the Buddha sees this as an opportunity to, in fact, illuminate back how deeply wise Sariputta is himself in acknowledging his wisdom. So the Sariputta in the second verse says, as the one with vision is seen in the world together with its devas, having dispelled all darkness alone, he achieved delight. So the supreme delight is to end all suffering. And the supreme darkness is to have conquered ignorance. He did this alone because he wasn't taught by anyone, whereas the arahants are taught by the Buddha or by the Dhamma or the Dhamma Vinaya. And as the one with vision is seen in the world together with its devas. So this Buddha is the one with the vision, the vision of wisdom, the vision that penetrates the darkness of the defilements. And it is a vision that is seeing the whole world, that is the world of rebirth, the world of anicca, anatta, and dukkha, and the world of the many planes, the many different realms, like the hell realms and the devaloka. And then the third verse, to the Buddha unattached, impartial, not a schemer, one who has come as leader of a group, I have come in need with a question on behalf of many here who are bound. So here the binding is the opposite to being unbound. So to be awakened is to be unbound, to be free from defilements, to be free from the cycles of rebirth, and to be free from delusion. And the Buddha does this. He is free from attachment. So the second noble truth is that we are suffering because of our attachments. So the fundamental quality is that he is unattached or free from attachment. Therefore, he is also impartial. He is equanimous. He is not a schemer. He doesn't have an agenda. He has right attitude and right view. One who has come as a leader of a group. So he is a leader of the group of wise people. And he is the one who can answer questions, deep questions that are existential in nature, like what is the cause of suffering? Why is it that we suffer? So even any modern philosophy these days will not point to birth as the cause, you know, the beginning of a life of suffering. They will always point to other reasons. They will say, oh, this person insulted me, I am suffering. But they won't turn around and say, because I exist, because I was born, this suffering is just arising because as a conditionality of my existence. So we don't take existence seriously, and we don't take rebirth at all seriously. Anyway, these are some thoughts on these first this opening section of the sutta, where Sariputta gives these honorific statements about the Buddha. Maybe did you get any chance to open that?
Thank you that Dinit was here and he opened it after connecting. Thank you very much for your considerate message. So if I am to read the Pali, Sariputta Sutta, Name Ditta Ito Ubbe Nasutto Udakasachi Evang Vagvado Satta Tusita Ganemani Gato. He says, such a person who is having good words and came from Tusita Deva Vimana, from Tusita Deva Vimana to mother's womb, according to the Sri Lankan commentary. That means not from the Abhidhamma Desana, this is as a birth from the Tusita. He came amidst of Arahant and he became the leader of Arahant and became founder of the Buddhism or another religion. And I have never seen such a miraculous life, even I have never heard about. So your remarks about this Venerable Sariputta's attribution of Abhidhamma to Venerable Sariputta and the Buddha's going to Tusita as a omniscient, Sarvajna, and coming back with so much of miracles are very, very important to the Abhidhamma sects. But those who are not interested in that, they don't care about, because Dhamma Vinaya is enough for them. Sutta Pitaka and Vinaya Pitaka is enough. Without Abhidhamma Pitaka, Abhidhamma Pitaka is secondary data analysis. They are the after the farmer harvested the field, the other people go there and pick what is left over, something like that. So every religion is having that. So they can entertain it, which is called Buddhist psychology. But your attribution that Venerable Sariputta's statement came from Tusita, it is an indication. But in this Tusita, 1 minute, the attribution, but Venerable Sariputta never do that kind of an attribution. Buddha taught me special Dhamma while I was in Tusita, kind of thing, it is not there. So therefore, these fabrications can happen, but we must not deny or we must not accept it, because more than that, there are some facts, logical facts, what Venerable Sariputta is going to present. And he was also, commenting upon the Buddha, Venerable Sariputta himself become prominent, because he is the next to the Buddha, having all these qualities. So Buddha himself praised him as a leader of disciples. We are coming from the lineage of Venerable Sariputta and Moggallana. And Venerable Sariputta was very, very compassionate, and he was thinking about the newcomers, and he knows how to introduce Dhamma. Or in a traditional commentarial way, it says Venerable Sariputta can make disciples up to the first fruition knowledge, Sotapatti Magga. And Venerable Moggallana is taking him from the Sotapatti to Arahanthood. So that is how they are sharing their responsibilities. So Venerable Sariputta is very versatile. Whatever the person, even if it is, if he is not becoming a Sotapanna, never mind, he would have get the best touch about Dhamma, because he is an exemplified person. Venerable Sariputta is, so therefore his phrasing of Buddha is a kind of a sympathetic joy, as well as he himself highlight by himself. And the second one, Sadeva Kassa Loka Kassa Yatha Dissati Chakkuma Sabbang Tamang Vinodetva Ekova Ratimajjaga. He says between the God and humans, the Buddha is unshakable, unmistakable, and for the celestial as well as the human being, and he himself, without anyone's support, he enlightened first, and then teach others, and unsurpassable desire he surpassed. So that is the genuine quality of the Buddha. He himself says that the desire is such a dangerous thing, but he himself first got ridden, and then not only that, he prescribed for others, because it is such a contagious disease, difficult to eradicate, difficult to think about, difficult to talk about, but he took effort, and many got the results accordingly. And the third one, Tang Buddhang Atitang Tading Akusang Ganimahatang Bahunhamiddhang Paddhanang Atti Atti Panyena Agamang. Now he is describing in detail what are the specific qualities of the Buddha. There are a lot of castes in Sri Lanka, but anyway, the Buddha is the only person, he went through this desire and he was not shaken by fame, gain and other. Therefore, he is unshakable, tadi, and he is not biased to the others, and therefore he was good in leading people, giving a good role model, in this stanza, third one says, according to the Buddha, went to the celestial being, that is Tushitapura, to help past mother, last life mother Mahamaya, and from there only he is coming back to the human world. So that is something mystical in Abhidhamma based. And India, we have that particular place where is Buddha coming from the celestial plane to the down. That is something religious and the cultural aspect. So now onward, he is going to explain one by one. The Venerable Sariputta is going to explain one by one the specific qualities of the Buddha. Each and everyone in turn highlights Venerable Sariputta's understanding and appreciation and his own qualities. You may please continue, Venerable.
Yeah, I just want to give some background to some of the people here. They don't know anything about Tusita. So just that there are different realms, not just the human realm or the animal realm, but then there's the lower realms of the hell realms. Then there's between the animal realm and the human realm, there are the ghost realms. So we heard an 11-year-old telling about their experience of seeing strange beings. So then there's also the Trojans. These are kind of like constantly warring and battling. And then above the human realm, there are the angels. The angels, the devas. So there's a lot of different realms of devas, and then above the realms of the devas, there are the realms of the gods. So Tusita is is the highest realm of the devas, I think. And so in this Tusita realm, in this deva realm, in the life before he was born as the Buddha, this is where the Buddha to be arose. He was born in Tusita. And then when he died in Tusita, he was reborn into the womb of his mother that became his final life as a Buddha to be. So Tusita has this very special place in Buddhism as the you know, this very elite deva loka, this very elite deva realm to exist in. And the beings there have very good karma. They're very bright. They're very intelligent. And teachings given to these beings is very profitable because, and the Buddha would teach nightly to the beings in the quiet of the night. After midnight, he would teach the devas. So there are many, many suttas of the Buddha teaching the devas. But the peculiar thing in this sutta is that this is the sutta where the people who are into Abhidhamma say the Abhidhamma was taught, that that this reference here to Tusita is not a reference to his previous life as a deva, but to his present life as a Buddha. And that he went to Tusita to teach his dead mother. His mother died within 7 days of the Buddha being born, and she was reborn as a he in Tusita. And he, the Buddha, went to Tusita to teach his own mother the Dhamma, and what he taught was Abhidhamma. And then when he came back from Tusita, he taught Sariputta the Abhidhamma. So there's a lot of debate that happens between Buddhist monks about the position of Abhidhamma, that it is the highest teaching. Abhi means high and Dhamma is Dhamma. So the highest Dhamma is Abhidhamma, or that it's not, that it's just commentarial and it's post-canonic. It's after the time of the Buddha. So if you read Abhidhamma, it's very it's like the physics of Buddhism, metaphysics. It's physics. It's a very different beast to the Sutta Pitaka, to the Vinaya Pitaka. It's it tries to explain. It overreaches the Dhamma. It was initially an attempt to structure the teachings in a way that would be more like an encyclopedia of Buddhism, and it was put into a matrix, put into a structure, and then over time this abstracted teaching out of the Sutta Pitaka and the Vinaya Pitaka became this Abhidhamma. And as the Abhidhamma spread across the Buddhist world, it changed. So the Abhidhamma in China is different to the Abhidhamma here in Sri Lanka, because one is following the Theravada tradition and the other is following the Mahayana tradition. But if we look at the Vinaya Pitaka and if we look at the Sutta Pitaka, then we find that whether it's in China or here in Sri Lanka, it's the same. So it indicates that the Abhidhamma was added afterwards. But for the Burmese, again, this is a big deal. The sutta is the sutta where Abhidhamma is being rolled out into the world, and that Sariputta was the teacher of the Abhidhamma. And that's its importance in Buddhism. So there are a lot of internal debate and conflict that happens when monks will say from Burma, they will talk all about meditation, vipassana, and all sorts of stuff. They will talk about it in very much Abhidhamma terms, in language, in description. Whereas the Thai, especially the Thai forest tradition, they will emphasize that there is no Abhidhamma, that this is just commentarial, and they can be very dismissive of anybody talking about different things like mind moments, kinika samadhi, all these kind of commentarial things. So you kind of have to come up with your own, if you're a Theravada monk, you have to kind of make peace with Abhidhamma. Are you all in on Abhidhamma? Are you all out of Abhidhamma? Or are you both sides? So personally, I like to practice myself very much, and I enjoy reading Abhidhamma, but I don't take too seriously either. And so I try to have a measured approach myself personally with regards to the Abhidhamma, because it is beautiful scholarly work, and I think it needs to be appreciated for what it is, and can be very, very helpful, actually, for what it is. But we shouldn't in my own mind, I don't overreach with that this was the supreme teaching of the Buddha and it subordinates all other things. So that's why I'm very careful to look at the Sutta Nipada and to look at the suttas themselves as my guiding reference when I read the Abhidhamma. And if there's a conflict, I'll just go with what the suttas are saying and the Vinaya is saying, and I'll put the Abhidhamma aside as very nice intellectual scholarly stuff, something to be discussed with scholarly monks when I get the chance, but not taken too seriously. Maybe that gives an explanation to what Tusita is and why this sutta is of particular significance. You have anything further to say, Mahatero? You seem quite neutral about Abhidhamma yourself.
I think you committed yourself by expressing that. My ideas also may be almost parallel with that. But the thing is, I found that it is asking for trouble, because some people are very, very serious about Abhidhamma, specifically the Burma. Sri Lanka, we call specialized in Sutta. Thai, they claim their specialization is Vinaya, and Abhidhamma is for Burma. They have Abhidhamma Day, and they have so much of ceremonies, and they take Sariputta Venerable also as a mission for that. But for me, from the beginning, my lineage, specifically the immediate teachers, not the Venerable Janaram, but the others, they were not very serious about Abhidhamma. But I have taken time to learn it, because I can talk in their language. And some Chitta Viti, Kanika Samadhi, that kind of thing are very brisky, interesting, and just for the sake of explanation. But I would say Abhidhamma is for teaching. Sutta Pitta is for enlightenment. So if you are learning, if you are very keen about teaching, arguing and all the kind of thing, you must learn Abhidhamma. But if you are minding your own business, go to the forest and be unto yourself, Abhidhamma is not so serious and not so playing a big role. So being in Sri Lanka, it's a big issue. Big issue means big debate. But because popularization, because of people at large, if you are unto yourself, I fairly accept Sutta Pitaka would do whatever the necessary. And if you are be in the social, two or more, you need Vinaya, you need communication, whereby Abhidhamma, people say that those who do not know Abhidhamma, they do not know how to teach. So we are not worrying about teaching, we are worrying about learning. For learning, Venerable Sariputta is a very good example, Sutta Pitakas are very good, and this particular Sutta, Sariputta Sutta is the crux, is the important thing. I was not aware, unless otherwise your presentation. So it's a good way of looking at the situation from that point of view. Thank you.
Yeah, I really wanted to emphasize how if you read the sutta, it's completely not there at all. There is no Abhidhamma, and it's hard to believe that this is the keyhole that they shove Abhidhamma through. This place, so it's very significant. But when you look at the sutta, it's not there at all, and even the commentaries, they don't really go much into it. And but this is both of us have trained in Burma, so my God, it's a cult to some degree, you know, and you'll be almost meant swear into the Abhidhamma that you believe in it. It's the whole truth and nothing but the truth, and that it is the highest teachings of the Buddha. It's the purest teachings of the Buddha, and the more, you know, it's super complicated. But I really enjoyed being with Utejaniya. You know, he had zero scholarship, and so he was getting bashed for not knowing any Abhidhamma at all. And so I remember in one of the wasas I was with him, which was in 2014, he was doing a special study of Abhidhamma, trying to read through. But he wasn't reading it as a scholar. He was just reading it as a meditator, you know, being kind of arm twisted into reading Abhidhamma. And he would pull out these sentences from the Abhidhamma and read them to me. And he would just sort of say how impressed he was with this sentence and how it captured the experience of meditation very well. Like he was picking off the gems or the jewels that were in the Abhidhamma and delighting in the teaching, but as a practitioner, not as a scholar who wanted to, you know, beat and argue with you to death, you know. It was a nice experience of Abhidhamma in practice.
Now I think it is time up for the Pindapatha.
Yeah.
So we will continue next time. I'm sorry that it happened me to come yesterday without informing you. But anyway.
No, it's okay.
Assembling for the session, it's okay. We have the technology. I am now in Wayambe. I am going to start with my new rock kuti. And the small lake and other work. So I am taking leave. Thank you very much for the participation and having this session.
Okay, we will also go for Dana. Okay, so we'll just give our respects to you. So, Okasa.
Yeah.
Dami Bante. Okasa. Okay, Dwara Dienikatang Sabangatiang Kamatame Bante.